Hey everybody, welcome to the Indie Film Review. This is a show where we review independent films. I'm Dan. Wait.
No.
You did this last time.
Yeah, I did do
that
last
time. That's Dan. I'm Jared. Why do we do that?
We are in the process of, like, slowly stealing each other's identity.
We're basically the same human being. This is really just one guy talking into a mirror, like in The Evil Within.
Exactly.
So today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to review a couple of
shorties. Short films.
Yeah.
We took a break from long films. We looked at three short films that have been submitted to us via people of the film.
People of the film.
One of the actors from one of the films we're going to talk about submitted one. A director submitted one. And we just found one.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes I just find a thing and I'm like, hey, this looks like it would be really good.
I'm so glad that you found this one because, Jesus.
I don't know what you mean by that statement. Anyways, so our first short film is going to be Tyrannosaur and the Secret Garden.
Yes, directed by Joey Lever. Stars Joey Lever, India Lily Cooper, and Steve Price. And I believe Steve Price is the one that sent it to us.
Who did Steve Price play?
He played a man named Grant.
Was he the main guy? I think he was. Yeah, I think that's the main dude.
Starring Steve Price.
Yeah, exactly.
Alongside multiple child actors.
Chactors, we like
chacting,
to call them.
Chacting. Lots of chacting going on in this film. Jared.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me to tell you the synopsis of this film?
Was it you just remembering how the show works? You're like, oh, I'm not supposed to ask a question. I'm supposed to do the thing. Dan, I would really appreciate it if you tell us what this film is about.
Yes, Tyrannosaur and the Secret Garden is a film about grief, of losing a child and escaping to fantasy to really deal with that grief and really come to terms with your reality, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
I thought it was about a Tyrannosaurus Rex in a secret garden, Dan. I don't know what you're talking about here with all this subtext and critical thinking. I think you're really getting away from the true.
How crazy would it be?
Purpose
is
of the
if
film.
We if we oh my fucking god, these kids! Do you hear?
I
that?
Don't hear them. No.
They're screaming bloody murder.
Maybe they watch Lizzie.
Jesus Christ! Anyway, how funny would it be if we pull up Tyrannosaur in the Secret Garden, and it's just that one fight scene from Velocipaster.
Yes!
And then that's it.
Holy shit, that would be so good.
Crouching.
It would be a 10 out of 10 film.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Velocipaster.
And then Grant wakes up, and he was like, oh, I miss my kid and my wife.
It's lonely out in space, and I'm going to be...
What?
You said I miss my kid and I miss my wife. That's lyrics oh. to Rocket Man, isn't it? Jesus, get with the program.
I don't know.
What are we doing?
I guess
so. Talk about
this
movie, Jared.
Yeah, sure. I can do that. So this film is like a guy who's grieving. You're not really sure why he is. I guess we kind of spoiled it already. But he goes to sleep and then he gets kidnapped by children. You know, that's like a normal...
Yeah.
And they have like these cool masks on. I like the special effects in this movie. Or the practical effects, I mean. So, like, the cool, like, rabbit masks and the weird, yeah. like, crow kids that just cawed everyone all the time. It was giving me serious, like, Hook vibes of, like, the Lost
yeah,
Boys.
Lost Boys.
So it's like the
sure.
Lost Boys come and kidnap a grown man. Kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I guess Robin Williams goes to them in the yeah. Hook film. But it's kind of like a reverse. He got reverse hooked. Would you agree or disagree?
Yes, he got reverse hooked. Absolutely.
I don't know why I like that so much. So, how did you feel about the special effects in this movie, Dan?
Well, considering there was only one special effect.
Okay, let me rephrase. How did you feel about the special effect in this movie, Dan?
Oh, man. I wanted it to be more charming than it was. But uh-huh. it just... I really appreciated where this movie went and the acting and everything. But whenever you finally get to the Tyrannosaur that they are trying... Basically, they kidnap him so he can defeat this Tyrannosaur for them so he can get their rock back, the special rock.
Yeah, special
and,
rock.
And whenever we get to the Tyrannosaur, it's just a 2D drawing... Like, mixed animation of this crudely drawn Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I thought it was kind of cool, because it's like a kid's drawing come to life.
It is a kid's drawing come to life, and I guess it makes sense to the overarching narrative where, you know, he's dealing with his son who has passed, I believe, and he has a drawing that his son made, which is this Tyrannosaurus, as one does.
The one thing I'll say, though, is sometimes they don't really match what the Tyrannosaurus Rex is doing with what the actors are doing.
Yeah.
So that's probably the thing that I feel like they could have worked on more. But as far as the special effect, I thought it was pretty fun.
Oh,
it
kind of
reminded me of Puff the Magic Dragon. Have you ever seen that old kids show?
But Puff the Magic Dragon was better.
Yeah, of course, yes. They had money.
I'm just kidding.
Because, this film clearly is on a budget. I mean, a lot of these films
I really like the way where the portal is.
Yeah, some of the location shots are great.
In the middle of this forest with this weird kind of cylindrical castle tower. And
it's like a rampart.
Yeah, there's a door in there, and then that's where they return home to a different dimension, because these kids are from a different dimension, apparently. But they decorate it like children would decorate it. Like, there's streamers everywhere. I really like the dynamic of these are otherworldly beings, but they still look and behave
like children.
Like children. I really like that aspect of it.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I liked how they put the man in a prison cell that is easily breakable.
Yeah, and he even gets out of it eventually.
And then finally, he does just lift up and walk out of it. That was pretty great. And I thought the actor who played Grant, which I think is Steve Price, he did a great job. A lot of the kids did a good job too. I don't know if there's any kid where I'm like, meh. Yeah, I think everybody did a good job. It's just one of my big criticisms would be the plot was a bit predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that's not the focus, I guess, but it's like I kind of knew what was going on way before the film finally caught up to what. So maybe for a younger audience watching this, they'd probably enjoy it more. But then there's also some heavy stuff in it. I don't know. It's a little confusing. Did you catch that maybe his wife also died, his son and his wife, and that the wife was queen?
Oh, is the wife the queen?
The queen of all the little kids? Yeah, I think so.
I didn't catch that, no.
So I was like, ooh, did they even need to add that aspect to it? I feel like that's a double sad sandwich that he's just smushed into.
Well, I mean, people like to make double sad sandwiches. That's the whole point of movies, man.
Well, you do, because you like sad stuff.
Yeah, I do, but I don't know, this film really felt... I guess predictable is the good idea that you've already presented, but it even though it is predictable, it had a lot of what's the word I'm looking for?
Charm?
No, not charm.
Sex appeal?
Yes.
Don't say sex appeal. Do not say that.
No.
Okay, well, Dan, for final thoughts, because I basically gave mine. What could you say maybe you liked and disliked about it, and then
I liked the costuming a lot.
Okay.
I liked the... Oh, wait, there was more than one special effect, now that I'm thinking about it. The portal to the door was
Dude, there you go. That was kind of cool.
And then whenever they didn't show it that often, which was really good. They're like, okay, we can't show this because it'll be too cheesy. But what they did was they filmed people in close-up that are around the door, and they put more effects on the actual film, which was actually really well done.
Smart.
And I like how he joins their ranks as a tribe, of whatever their tribe is, the Beetlebub tribe.
The Beetleborgs.
Overall, it was a good movie that I did enjoy, even though it was predictable, as Jared said.
Yeah, it's a charming little film. There you go. Even though it was, had some really sad undertones. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of Disney stuff is like that, too. It's everyone's parents are all dead. So I'm sure kids could probably still watch this, too. It's fine.
Moving into the next film, Quiet Shore.
Let's get even more depressing.
Oh my god, this film is so depressing.
Let's get as depressing as we could possibly get.
Because
The Quiet Shore.
I've been having
the next film we're watching.
So much, such a hard. Like, I don't know. For some reason, recently, I've just been like really empathizing with movies and like really getting into like the psyche of the characters.
Danny, did you cry?
No, I didn't cry, but like I feel myself in these really weird positions of, you know, a character is having an affair or something. I'm like, oh, what if I'm in that? And then I'm like, oh, I don't want to be in this weird mental state.
What? I don't want to freak you out, and I'm not your doctor, so I mean, you probably talk to your doctor about this for advice, but you may be experiencing menopause.
Menopause?
Yes.
Interesting.
Are you getting cold flashes?
I do not know about this menopause.
No, it's okay, Dan. Feelings are normal, and you'll come to really appreciate them over time once you fully get a grasp of...
One day, hopefully.
No, I mean, like, certain films really do make me... Like, I've cried many times to films and just, like, felt super... Yeah. Like, I've gotten way too into what's going on with that character. Usually when it involves fathers and sons. Like, a father and son, I don't know why.
Well, see, that's what
that
I'm saying.
That stuff really gets
like,
me.
Like, recently, it's any time that a relationship is having trouble... And it keeps ramping up into these really tense social situations. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm like, fuck. Like, I don't want to watch this anymore.
All right. So Alex Ramirez sent this to us on Facebook. It's called The Quiet Shore.
He wrote and directed this film.
Yes. So, Dan, tell us a little bit about it.
It's about a woman with ALS who is essentially becoming not a woman anymore, as she says in the actual film. She doesn't feel like a human being. So basically, they're having marital problems while all this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for her to feel close to him,
they do a thing.
Yeah, we'll
yeah,
say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the best thing to say right now, because we kind of spoiled the first movie. But so anyways, ALS is probably one of the worst diseases you could have to deal with, to live through. It is horrific. Do you know how long the normal life expectancy for someone surviving with ALS is?
No.
I looked it up. It's 2 years.
Jesus Christ.
So it basically just stops all your muscles from working in your body. So one by one, each different part of your body just starts to shut down until, I guess, your heart and your brain shuts down. I don't know. It's horrific. Stephen Hawking had it, you know, but he lived like 15 plus years. He lived for a super long time, which
There's
is insanely
guitarist.
Rare.
There's a musician named Jason Becker who has it, and he's a fantastic musician, but he can't play anymore.
One of the big things in this movie is how, like, they have this relationship between these two characters, this man and the woman, and the woman has the ALS, and she's an artist, and she can't do her art anymore, and she can't please her husband anymore, and one of the big things is that she wants to find a way to sexually please her husband, because she can't. But I watched this, like... Stephen Hawking, not documentary. What is it where people play the characters, like actors?
Biopic.
A biopic. So I watched a biopic of Stephen Hawking, and in that, he cheats on his wife when he has severe ALS. So his dick work. Dan, his dick work. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe.
He's able to cheat on his wife and remarry, I'm pretty sure, with that ALS dick.
We don't know the severity of, you know, people's...
That's true.
And like, a discrepancy between man and women.
The discrepancy?
The discrepancy against man and women and their body parts.
The discrepancy of our city. Yeah, no.
Discrepancy
no, you're right, you're right.
Our city.
I guarantee I've made that joke before.
I know.
So, Dan, tell me some highlights about this film, maybe stuff that...
Well, what I'm looking at here on IMDb is this film had a budget of $2,000, and man, what a film for $2,000.
Yeah, they did a great job for $2,000.
It definitely looks a lot more expensive than that.
How did they get the location shots with $2,000? They were like in a hospital, and they had that restaurant, and all
That's
of that looked great.
That's a good question, exactly.
All the extras, you're like, what the heck? This certainly looks a lot... way more expensive than $2,000, so bravo.
I'm curious about it, too. Like, was this a student film that they,
I will say, in the opening, when they have the two characters in the car and they're going back and forth, there's just, like, a a two-camera shot of close-ups of their faces and they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really like that as starting off the film. It felt awkward, and I felt like I needed like a wide shot or just something to show them both in the same space together. It made me feel claustrophobic, and it kind of gave me a bad impression of the film at first. And I know the reason they did that is because of budgetary reasons.
Yes, and like another part of the film that made me feel the exact same way you're talking about is whenever he goes to the bar and he goes to the bathroom to get that nose powder from that girl. But the way they film it in the bathroom, because you don't have a lot of room, just it was so tight in that space. And it really was, maybe it was a little detrimental, but like, then again, it could have, you know, bear a meaning that, you know, he feels suffocated in his current situation.
And it's just, hey, if that's what you got to work with, that's what you got to work with. I mean, not everybody can afford taking out part of a wall so you can film your bathroom scene, you know? How did you feel about that ending? I guess we're going to talk about the ending now. We're going to spoil The Quiet Shore.
Yeah, so the very ending of this film, you have a prostitute come into the hotel room.
Prostitute.
That they have ordered. And it's not quite clear, but she's lying down next to him. Like, husband and wife are lying down next to each other, and the prostitute is on top of the husband. And the husband definitely does not feel comfortable about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife doesn't necessarily feel comfortable about it either. Just like
she's crying.
Yeah.
She's like weeping.
But
it didn't seem enjoyable to anyone.
But it was her idea, and she paid for it. And then it ends. It just ends on that. It ends on him having came in this prostitute. And then the prostitute, like, looks over at the bed like, well, now you guys figure it out.
Nasty. From their previous conversation, because she keeps talking about, like, when I die, I want a Viking wedding. Or not a Viking wedding. A Viking funeral, where, you know, you get your body sent off to sea and they shoot fiery arrows at it or whatever. She keeps talking about, like, she's going to die and she wants to die and all this stuff, right? So I thought, during that hotel scene, that woman was there
to kill her.
Yeah, assisted suicide. So I'm like, this lady's kind of attractive for someone who would be assisted suiciding people, but like, who am I to judge? You know, like, she can look however she wants. Okay. And then she takes her clothes off. No, then she says, I'm going to go change. And I'm like, oh, she's probably changing into her, like, doctor's uniform
her scrubs,
to make it more official.
Yeah.
She comes back in lingerie, which I don't know if prostitutes do that, but okay. And then the sexing begins. And yeah, they're, like, both holding hands while she's boning the dude. And I was like, what do you think would have been better if she got assisted suicided or that? Because, like, that has completely ruined their entire relationship. Because he already was, like, cheating on his girlfriend and kind of tried to stop. And
yeah,
he's addicted to drugs or whatever. But, like, this, I feel like it's the last straw. It's, like, it would be so hard for me to imagine being in that situation. I guess that's the whole point of that, of the film, is, like, having a partner who suddenly gets ALS.
It's really concerning. Like, it's what are you supposed to do in that situation? Like, that's all you can think about. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, the fact that she is an artist and her whole livelihood, her whole, you know, what she has found meaning in life is robbed from her. Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing that she has is her husband. And, you know, obviously there's issues there because of the marital problem. It's a pretty intense movie without being an intense movie, you know? Like, really have to think about the social implications of, you know, all the actions that these characters go through.
Yeah, and I think the film accomplishes its goal by making, like, putting you in the shoes of either character. Like, I was just like, man, the whole fucking thing is a mess.
Now, Jared, my question here is The Quiet Shore. Like, how did you feel about that metaphor?
I didn't get it. What was...
I didn't quite get it either. That's why I'm a little bothered by it.
Because they show The Quiet Shore.
Yeah, they
show
it very often. And, like, I guess what I got out of it is just what this character misses the most about being alive. Like, she has a happy place, which is The Quiet Shore. And she can't really achieve that anymore in her mind. But what the fuck is that ending? Like, how did that make any... How did that make any kind of sense to fix any... I don't know. That might just be my personal gripes coming out.
Yeah. Like, I think maybe the quiet shore is her wanting to just die.
Maybe.
Because she wants that Viking funeral, right?
Yeah.
She's, like, going out to sea to get shot by fiery arrows or something. I don't know. So that's why I thought when the movie took this, like, U-turn and did the sex thing, and I'm like, that's not where I thought this movie was going. But yeah, it's an interesting film. Now we have to talk about Lizzie, Dan.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. First off, I'm sorry. I'm
First
sorry
of
to
all,
you. Sorry.
I think it's fair to say that nobody needs to watch Lizzie. Only because I thought it was going to do something new, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the same shit in the same toilet that we just keep plunging and plunging and plunging, and then now you just got nasty shit everywhere.
Try to explain Lizzie to us.
It's super easy. Basically, there's a shitty kid that needs to get her ass in gear, and the parents hire a nanny to do this, and, well, the kid overpowers the nanny. How many fucking times have we seen that?
Wow-wee!
How many times has that been done by Hanna-Barbera?
Get this,
in cartoon
Dan.
Form.
This kid is a goth. No!
She's 11 years old, too, which is kind of hard to believe.
Is she 11, like, in real life, that
no.
actor?
No.
I don't think so.
And then for a long time, I thought Nanny McNierney, whatever her name is.
The lady who looked like Mimi from the Drew Carey Show? The old lady with the makeup?
I was, like, I could have sworn she was a man for the entire film.
That would have been actually way more interesting. Way more interesting if it was like a Mrs. Doubtfire situation.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking the entire time, and it never came to fruition. It was just really upsetting.
What you've just said is the entire film. There is no character arcs. There's no anything. Like, nothing, no goals are attained. You're exactly where you were from when it began to when it ended. The only enjoyment you would be getting out of it would be the gags. And the jokes in all of them are just terrible. The comedy in this is so tone deaf. I don't even understand, like, who this movie is for.
Well, exactly, because it's been done so many times. Like, who gives a shit about this plot line anymore? Like, what the fuck?
I think what drew me to this film is a still of the nanny. The nanny freaked me out. I was like, this lady looks insane. I want to see what this weird movie is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything else about it. I don't know. It's like, yeah, why? Just why? Why would they make this? What is the purpose of this? It was almost like someone's like, I dare you to make a film. And they're like, all right, I'll do it. I've made a film here. So, like, the shots and the construction are not that bad. But, yeah, just the content of it and, like, why are we doing this is the big question. And it's like if you took the Addams Family and you took, like, the you know that little girl from the Addams Family?
Wednesday.
And it's like, now make that not funny at all. And that's the and just take away the rest of the characters. And
then you
that's
have
this
like
movie.
You can see budget in props. Like there's a book that the nanny pulls out that says, you know, how to get like this pain in the ass to be on your side or something like that. And it has a like a drawing, like a upscale drawing of, you know, this little bratty girl. And I'm like, somebody spent the time and effort to make that prop, you know, a real thing, and they didn't do anything with it. Like we've been saying, like, we've seen it before.
Yeah.
Like, what are we bringing new to the table in this film? There's really nothing.
Yeah, it's a sad mess. It's a sad affair for everyone involved, especially because it looks like a lot of effort went into this film.
Yeah.
Like, from acting's perspective to the production to even, like, everything about it. It's just like, maybe people are laughing at this. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. Maybe you are wrong.
I doubt it. I doubt it. Yeah, Bert. One good thing I'll say, there was a scene where the old lady, Mimi or whatever, asks the little goth girl, because goth girls are bad, by the way. I don't know if you know that. Goth girls need to be fixed and they're bad. To draw a picture of something happy. And she draws a picture of the babysitter being hung, and it says, "Hang in there, Lizzie," and that kind of made me laugh. But yeah, just the image of it, I kind of like was like, oh, that's good. But, like, the punchline didn't work for that joke. Like, all the other things just didn't work for that joke. All right, is that final thoughts? Are we done with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Lizzie was rough. But definitely watch Quiet Shore and Tyrannosaur and the Secret Garden. Those are two solid short films for your...
Yeah, for sure.
For your indie reviewing pleasure.
So there's a Screen Rant article that I thought was interesting. It's the most... It's the highest grossing independent films of all time. And this was done 2 days ago. Ooh, okay. So what do you think is the highest grossing independent film of all time, Dan?
Highest grossing?
Yeah.
Is it a horror movie?
One is a horror movie. Two of them are horror movies.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Let's see. I don't think that's on here. One of them is a Robin Williams vehicle.
What was he in that's indie?
A lot of Blumhouse.
Is Blair Witch on there?
Yes. Blair Witch is number 7. So the number 1 is Passion of the Christ.
Wow.
I didn't know this was an independent film. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that makes
Mel
sense.
Mel Gibson funded it entirely.
Yeah.
$30 million he spent, and he got $622 million. They're going to make a sequel to that, I guess. I guess they're just going to bring back Jesus and, like, punch him in the face. They're going to have, like, Muhammad Ali just, like, beat him to death again.
Jesus.
I don't know. People seem to really literally like when Jesus Christ gets tortured for 2.5 hours. All right, so number 2 is The King's Speech. Number 3, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that was an indie.
Yeah, number 4, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Number 5, The Full Monty, which I've never seen. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it.
Let's see. It rarely gets talked about. I guess it was made in England. Yeah, it doesn't really say much about it. But yeah, Get Out is on here too, is number 6. Mm-hmm. And then Blair Witch. And then the Robin Williams Good Will Hunting was an independent film, which I did not know.
Oh.
Kind of cool. And then Juno is number 9. Made $231 million out of a $6.5 million budget.
Wow.
And then Fahrenheit 9/11.
Jesus.
Which is like, get out of here, Michael Moore. Okay, yeah. So that's a fun little list. Okay, Dan, where can people find us?
People can find us on Twitter at IndieFilmPod. You can find us on Instagram at IndieFilmReviewPod. You can email us and give us your movies at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com.
Said it so forcefully. And hey, thank you everybody who keeps submitting to us. I mean, we've been getting a lot of good submissions lately, and I mean, I feel like there's like one point where I'm like, all right, I'm gonna have to go and actually advertise again, because like the first time I advertised was when we first started doing the show, and I haven't had to do that since. I think I did like one. I've been doing some stuff on Reddit, but I mean, I don't really get too much from Reddit. A lot of it's just like people submitting from Facebook and from our email, which is like super awesome. So, yeah, thanks again. I appreciate it. Keep sending us those submissions, because we want to watch a movie! Anyways, Necropodicon is where we are hosted. Go to necropodicon.com and click on the link to the Discord. You can come say hello to us. If you go to that website, too, there's a lot of really great shows on there you can check out that are kind of similar to ours. We got movie podcasts and review podcasts and a lot of cool, like, D&D and... Sons of the Fathers is a Call of Cthulhu podcast that Paul does. He's the head of the network. He's a super good guy. He's doing season 2 of Sons of the Fathers, and it's real good. I like that show. It's like, I don't know what else to say. It's like, it's such a high production value. It blows our shit out of the water. It's it's great. But, you know, maybe one day I'll add like a slide whistle or something.
Yes.
Boop.
A juice harp that wow.
Yeah, a little juice harp. Yeah, maybe we'll do a little juice harp eventually. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate you. Dan, you have the final word.
Oh, fuck.
Is Dan jerking off right now? Oh, fuck.
Normally, people named Lizzie are evil. Like Lizzie Borden?
Lizzie McGuire?
I found this Theron Black box. I thought you might want to take a look at it.
She hands over a clear rectangle sheet of black glass with smooth edges.
Oh, wow. This is really cool.
Where did you get that? You shouldn't have that.
I found it on a Theron ship that crashed.
Maybe I could take it to a friend?
I would use the word friend lightly.
Misha walks over to a small filing cabinet that's next to his bed, and he takes a key from around his neck. He unlocks the cabinet, and he pulls out two black cases, which are both marked with Theron symbols.
As you place it down, it instantly lights up.
You know what this means, right?
This could be the chance we've been looking for.
That doesn't sound good.
Sons of the Fathers is a sci-fi horror podcast using the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu role-playing system. It is a Necropodicon original. We advise that the show isn't for children, but is great for those who revel in hapless protagonists facing ever-increasing bad odds. Sons of the Fathers. Boundless space. Endless horror.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.